And welcome to Out of the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland. The Madison Symphony is going to be performing three concerts again this weekend. And this weekend's program consists of Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony with all those lush romantic melodies in it. And by some accounts, a very difficult work, the Too Hot to Kata by contemporary composer Aaron J. Kernis, a work written maybe back in the 90s. And then the centerpiece of the program is a Spanish work by a French composer, and some of the best Spanish music seems to come from French composers. In this case, it's Edward Lalo, and who would know better than my guest, Augustin Hadalich, who will be the violinist for that work. Would you call it a concerto, this Spanish work by Lalo?
Yes, it's definitely a concerto, even though it's called, he called it Symphony Espanol. I think that the scope of it, the length, and also the fact that it's five movements, you know, it doesn't really follow the traditional concerto form. So in that way, it is more symphonic. But it's a concerto in the sense that there's a solo violin part, and all the rest is... In this piece, it really is, in many places, accompaniment.
You mean the orchestra is just accompanying with the violin?
Yes, in most places. And you know, he wrote a lot of other concertos after this because it was such a huge success. But they never quite reached this. They never became as popular. They're just not quite as good. It seemed like when he was writing the Spanish work, he just tapped into something inside himself. You know, he really managed to write very good music. It was written for Pablo de Sarasate,
one of the great violinists. Right, a lot of major works.
Yeah, one of the greatest.
He wrote his own too, of course.
Yeah, he wrote a lot of music for himself, and he was a great musician. And there are some recordings actually.
Oh, really?
Of Sarasate, because when he was very old, he made some recordings, and even though he was already older and not at the height of his power, you can tell that it's not just very good playing technically, but it's also very beautiful, very elegant.
Really, even you can, because this would be pre-1908 recordings, and it's interesting to imagine the beauty that could come through nonetheless.
Well, there's a lot of background noise, but you can tell this is a very elegant violinist. You know, he was a charmer. You know, he really charmed people, and didn't. So there was that whole aspect in addition to the virtuosity.
Do you think the Sarasate style has influenced you at all in your playing in this piece in particular?
Well, I think knowing that about Sarasate, I already had like an inkling, because in his own music reveals that he's a musician who understands music, played emotionally, and he sort of shows that in his own works already. I think Lalo wrote this piece really with him in mind and his way of playing, and it shows off the violinist a lot, this piece. There's a lot of very fast virtuosic playing, especially in the last movement, but actually several of the movements have a lot of technical fireworks.
Was that fun for you, the fireworks?
Well, some of them, learning some of these parts wasn't too much fun, but it is what's great about it is that all these difficulties, they really also look difficult. They look impressive. There's a lot
great
of concertos actually that are really, really hard, but when it's done really well, it doesn't sound very hard. So it's in this case, it's very gratifying.
It's a showpiece.
It is a showpiece. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you think it's legitimately Spanish, or is it pseudo Spanish?
Well, this was a time when Spanish music started to be really, really in vogue, and
sure.
it remained this way for another 40 years after that. So this was written just the same year as the opera Carmen.
Oh, so 1871.
But actually, a little, I think...
1870, yeah, five maybe, yeah, five.
Yes, don't ask me those things. I knew once, but yes, anyway, 1870s, definitely. And In fact, just a little bit before. So he wasn't. It wasn't really that Carmen gave him the idea. I think all the French composers.
He did write a Carmen fantasy, though. Sarasate did.
Sarasate did. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Later on, but I think all the French composers were sort of singing the same thing. They were all just suddenly thinking Spanish music in their head, and so you know, you hear all these Spanish sounding turns of phrases, you know, which remind you of flamenco music or different, you know, other dances like seguidilla and the habanera as well, which you associate with Spanish music and a lot of Spanish rhythms. I feel that the strength of this piece is that it doesn't really sound like a cliche. It doesn't sound like it's just like it's very superficial. I think that he really he loved this music, but he really expressed something with it. You know, it's not kitsch. It's very tasteful, actually.
Well, as long as we're on the topic of Spanish music, you have this new CD that just came out, I think, and it's called Histoire du Tango, and it features music of a genuine Spanish composer, Manuel de Falla. You have Astor Piazzolla represented, of course, how could you not, with the tango theme. And then some things by Paganini also, but Manuel de Falla is his popular Spanish songs, which in this case means for violin and guitar.
Yeah, originally for voice and piano, but there's a violin transcription which is done quite frequently, and there's also voice and guitar transcription, so we sort of combined the two. And since the piano accompaniment was often imitating
the guitar anyway,
sounds anyway,
yeah,
it works because Spanish folk songs, of course, often accompanied by guitar.
Sure, sure. So we'll hear two or three of these, starting with one that's, how would that translate?
It's the first title is The Moorish Cloth. The idea is that It's a bit tongue in cheek, but then maybe it has a deeper meaning. Also, it's sort of a lament that this Moorish cloth has been stained, you know, and now it isn't worth anything. Yeah. But some people speculate, maybe it symbolizes virginity, perhaps. But
okay, and we'll from there we'll go to the music and let it speak for itself. And your guitarist is Pablo Sanz Villegas.
Yes. Yes.
An abrupt finale there, isn't it, for that first piece, Moorish Cloth, from the Canciones of Manuel de Falla, and playing my guest today, Augustin Hadelich, and the guitarist was Pablo Sanz Villegas. You use the same violin for pretty much all of these things, Augustin?
Yes, I've been playing on the same violin for about 3 years. And it's a very beautiful Stradivari made in 1723, loaned to me through the Stradivari Society of Chicago. So I've been very lucky to play it. It's beautiful.
And the thing about those violins is they seem to be able to play just about anything. I mean, including the most, you're using it for the Piazzolla. We'll be hearing that one for the Piazzolla also?
Yes. It is very versatile. I think that's, when you play with big orchestras, concertos and in big halls, you know, you need an instrument that has enough dynamic range that,
sure,
you can really hear it above the orchestra.
Right.
So that's one strength this violin has, but it also, Stradivari's from this period also have a lot of colors in their sound and a very beautiful sound, and it's versatile enough that even when you hear it in a small room or in on recording when the microphone is so close, there's a lot of interesting beauty in it. It's not just loud.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And in fact, in recording, you often pull back from the volume and, you know, explore all those colors that maybe in a big concerto, in a big hall, you wouldn't really be able to because you have to play out so much.
Well, this second piece that we're going to hear for contrasting tempo from the same set by Manuel de Falla is Asturiana, and that's is that a specific dance from Asturias? Is that the idea?
No, it's a very slow and sad song, and the text says that the protagonist, who is a woman, she went to this willow tree, hoping that it would console her because, you know, she was crying. But then instead, the willow started to weep as well.
Okay, sounds like one of those great Greek legends to me. Asturiana from that same collection. And again, the guitarist is Pablo Sanz Villegas, and he's playing with violinist Augustine Hadley. Asturiana from a collection by Manuel de Falla. And you usually hear those as violin and piano pieces, I think, more than anything else. But in this case, and quite convincingly, it's violin and guitar. Augustin Hadelich and Pablo Sanz Villegas from Augustin Hadelich and his Stradivarius. And a reminder that he'll be performing this weekend. It's Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 in the Overture Center in Madison with the Madison Symphony. And the program will include Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony, the Too Hot Toccata by Aaron J. Kernis, and then in the middle of it all, the Lalo Symphony Espanol. Now, what about this last piece you're particularly interested in? There's a set of total of five of these, Augustine. But the
yes, originally the songs that you wrote were originally seven. We selected five because when you don't have the words, some songs don't quite work the same way. But there are some where the melodic material communicates so much already without the words that it works. So we've selected just five. This one is Apollo and. The protagonist, she's really, really furious.
And what do we know? What she's furious about?
Well, it's her lover.
Okay, and so you have to communicate that. Here we go. You almost need castanets and with the taps on the heels of the shoes to go with
this
that.
One. Yes,
yes, potent stuff from Manuel de Falla. This is a disc that has, as I mentioned earlier, it also has some Paganini on it. And what made you choose Paganini? Now, he did write pieces for violin and guitar, though, didn't he?
Yeah. So when Pablo and I set out to record the CD together, and we thought what to include. That was an obvious choice because he's one of the few composers who actually wrote original music for violin and guitar. Because he played the guitar as well, and he had several guitar students who were all that he was somewhat also involved with romantically as well. And he wrote a lot of pieces. Now, a guitarist don't actually love playing many of them because the guitar is often
relegated.
Really just accompanying. Uh-huh. You know, it's sort of a pretty dumb guitar part. But we found one, which is a real duo, and then we also transcribed something that Paganini wrote for violin and orchestra and for violin and guitar. But yeah, the centerpiece of the program was Istra di Tango by Piazzolla, which is a four movement piece that traces the history of the tango from when it first started around 1900 until today and how it changed. That is an arrangement too. It was originally flute and guitar, which were the original tango instruments.
Hmm.
But of course, the violin became the instrument associated with tango in the 30s or so. And it does, like a lot of flute music, it sounds maybe better on the violin.
Well, for the tango, yeah, as you say, it's almost hard to imagine the violin not being involved in there somewhere. And what's the title of this last one in this set of four from Piazzolla?
So the set sort of traces the history. So the first one is Bordel 1900, when it was first played in the brothels, and then Café 1930s.
We really have a theme going in this CD. Exactly. It's subtle and understated, but it's there.
Well, then it was played in the cafes and then in the nightclubs. But the title of the last one is Concert of Today, 1990. So the idea is that now the tango has sort of arrived in the concert hall and is, sort of recognized as a serious
Argentinian composer. Why does he have a French title, do you suppose?
It was just Istra di Tango.
Marketed in Europe or what?
I think it was probably just because it was published there. In Spanish countries, people call it Historia del Tango, which makes more sense. But we sort of went with the official title, but yes.
Okay, here it is. This would be a tango for today. So that one, is that as hard as it sounds? There's a lot going on there in a short period of time. A lot of dynamics.
Yes, it's challenging. I think the and the guitar part gets quite difficult as well. But we had a lot of fun just exploring all this tango. It was kind of a really new territory for me because I hadn't played that sort of music before. But we had some coachings. There are actually a lot of tango violinists and tango groups and dance coaches in New York City where we both live. And so
CBS
we had
just had a feature on the tango last, I think it was last weekend, on one of their weekend shows. They had a long story about tango clubs in which the reporter actually participated in the dance at one point. So I gather it's still the rage.
Yes, I took a few lessons. And just to try to get a feel of what the dance feels like and how it moves, and I'm not very good, but it's really a beautiful dance, and then also just we had some coachings on the style, because Piazzolla it's almost like playing Baroque music, that in that there's a lot of things that he doesn't write in. He assumes that the player knows how to ornament, how to sort of play with the rhythms, and because everyone around him knew. But of course, if classical violinist like myself sees the music, I don't know all those things, so we had to do some research, but we had a great time playing it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you were definitely into it. Well, before you take off, Augustin, give us a little take. Give us your experience with Pablo de Sarasate's Zigeuner Vise, and it's kind of a popular thing, but also another of those tour de force, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of his most frequently played works, and it's like a gypsy improvisation written down, and he wrote it for himself to perform. So I figured it has a connection to the Lalo I'm playing this week, because of course that Lalo was written for Sarasate. He was the violinist who made it famous. Yes.
And what's in it for you?
In the Sarasate.
Yeah.
It's very, very flashy, lots of you know, technical fireworks, especially in the last part, in the fast part. And it's, you know, it's wild. It's also very, very beautiful. It's extremely, extremely popular with audiences. I started playing it when I was, I'm not even sure, I think maybe 8.
Really?
I started playing this a long time ago. But then I didn't play it between maybe ages 10 and, you know, 22 or something like that. I just sort of forgot about it. Because I thought of it, you know, many people think of it as, oh, it's this piece, it's kind of overplayed, you know, everyone does it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure everyone does it really anymore, but it's certainly very famous with audiences. And so we discovered how good it is. It's really great. So we transcribed it for violin and guitar for the CD. And in a way, I think that actually works particularly well. He wrote it for violin and orchestra originally. You also hear it often violin and piano.
Right.
But of course, he is imitating...
the guitar.
Uh-huh. Because in the gypsy band, you have the guitar accompanying the violin. And so there's a lot of strumming sounds. And when you do it with guitar, kind of adds more gypsy flavor.
I'm guessing that's a pretty good workout for a guitarist, too. Longish for that kind of playing.
Yes, and there are definitely passages, even though they're supposed to sound like guitar, you know, the notes are not written in such a way that it lies comfortably for the guitarist's
finish.
Yes, it's not idiomatic. In fact, some of them are specifically made so that some passages are explicitly written so that they're easy on the piano. And so, you know, I when we first... we're working on the arrangement. He was cursing a lot for that reason. then he did a fantastic job.
This is a very earthy CD. There's a lot of history behind it. And here it is. The last piece on this latest disc by Augustin Haderlich is the Zigeunerweisen Gypsy Ways by Pablo de Sarasate. And again, the guitarist is Pablo Sanz Villegas. And thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes.